So we're on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, and we're trying to work out a situation in which there's Kimle B'derab Mineh, and we're talking about a situation where he stole something and then he carried it out into Rishus HaRabim, and he's chayev for both Gneva and Hotzah, and since they're both chiyuvim of, let's say, mis and mamon that overlap, therefore we apply the principle of kimei v'ram minei. And the Gemara tries to set it up with a case of tzidei rishus harab, which I think is the last thing that we saw on Thursday, on Yom Chamishi.
When I was listening to the tape, it seemed to be that this is the case.
Okay, so let's see if we can now locate it. We're on Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, and we're going to start with the words Lo Tzricha. Those words are parallel to Tosus Divra Maschil E, which I think is the fourth Tosus on the page. So if you find Tosus Divra Maschil E, the Afke.
Lo Tzricha the Afke the Tzidei?
Yeah, it's sort of like on the second line of Tosus, parallel Lo Tzricha the Afke the Tzidei Rishus HaRab. So let's try to understand what the Gemara is talking about here. So we're looking for a case where, on the one hand, it is Rishus HaRabim, on the other hand, it's not Rishus HaRabim. What do I mean? As far as the Chiyuv Shabbos is concerned, it is considered Rishus HaRabim. And as far as the Kinyan of Mashiach is concerned, where Kinyan Mashiach only operates when you take it out into Rishus HaYochid, we're going to consider Tzidei Rishus HaRabim as Rishus HaYochid. And in order to explain that, the Gemara goes through here a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that Tzidei Rishus HaRabim has the status of Rishus HaRabim, but that'll solve our Shabbos problem and explain why he would be chayav for Shabbos. It would not answer our question of Kinyan Mashiach. On the other hand, the Rabbanan are of the opinion that Tzidei Rishus HaRabim loved Rishus HaRabim Dami. And then although that could solve the problem of Kinyan Mashiach and Chiv Gneva, it won't solve the problem of Chiv Shabbos. So the Gemara now introduces what we called, if you recall, we called it a theory of relativity, that Rabbi Eliezer, on the one hand, is going to establish that the status of Tzidei Rishus HaRabim is that of Rishus HaRabim. That's as far as Shabbos is concerned. But on the other hand, as far as Gneva is concerned and Kinyanei Mashiach, Tzidei Rishus HaRabim has the status of Rishus HaYochid. And the reason for that split is because as far as Shabbos is concerned, all we need is that sometimes people use the Tzidei Rishus HaRabim. I mean, those who go down the main highway, sometimes they push themselves, if it's very crowded, into the Tzidei Rishus HaRabim, which are off to the side. But as far as Kinyanim is concerned, since it's basically a private area, which is called in the Gemara's language, Lo Shlichi Be'Rabim, therefore it has the status of Rishus HaYochid, and he can make a Kinyan. And this leads us to Rav Ashi. So actually, I think we got up to Rav Ashi, and we could start from Rav Ashi today. And again, it's a little bit hard for me to tell you where that is, but if you...
There's a line in Vilna Shas that starts with a small aleph. And Rav Ashi is the line after that.
Excellent. And the first word in the line is Ravim, so we'll start with Rav Ashi. So again, Rav Ashi is now going to give us another way of understanding how we can have an overlap between the Kinyan Gneva and the Chiyuv for Hotzah L'Rishus HaRabim, meaning for Meleches Hotzah. You don't have to set up the Braisa as a case where he drags it into Tzidei Rishus HaRabim. I have a better alternative. Rav Ashi Omar. So again, the Braisa is talking about a case where a person steals a wallet and he drags it out into Rishus HaRabim Mamash, according to Rav Ashi. You'll ask me the question, if he drags it into Rishus HaRabim, he's not chayv as a ganav because there's no kinyan mashiach into Rishus HaRabim. Kigon, shetzeref yado lamata mishlosha. v'kiblo. So what he does is, he has his hand close to the Rishus HaRabim. What does that mean, close to Rishus HaRabim? It's got to be below three tefachim, because let's say we're talking about a principle which is called lavud, and lavud means that the karka goes up to, but not beyond, shlosha tefachim. So all the airspace which is above the karka, but up to the level, up to the height of shlosha tefachim, is considered kemunach al gabi karka. So at this particular point, he has not yet achieved his kinyan, his kinyan gneva, because he's still in Rishus HaRabim, because it's lamata mishlosha. However, says Rav Ashi, the kibla, what he does is he drops the wallet from one hand into his second hand, which means the following, that he could be kona now midin hagbah. If you recall, we said that a kinyan hagbah is unique vis-a-vis a kinyan meshicha, in that it operates even in Rishus HaRabim. So that once we're lamata mishlosha, we can certainly invalidate any kinyan meshicha. And the reason for that is because you're still in Rishus HaRabim if you're lamata mishlosha tefachim, and there is no meshicha in Rishus HaRabim. So let's say he picks up the wallet in the Rishus Bailim, which is Rishus HaYochid, that's owned by the Nignav, the one who owns the object. And then he does a Hanocha by placing the wallet into his hand, which is in Rishus HaRabim. However, what's unique here is that once he puts the wallet into his hand, as opposed to the case of dragging it, he can be kona with a kinyan hagbah. And the chiddush of Rav Ashi is that a kinyan hagbah could operate, it could be valid, even if it's shlosha tefachim al gabi karka. And even though we don't have hagbah less than gimel tefachim, in order to lift something else up, you need to lift it above three tefachim from its makom hanocha, wherever that makom hanocha is. However, we have a unique halacha of yad. And what does that mean? The yad of a person, as we'll soon see in Rava, is considered chashuva. Chashuva means it has a certain significance. It's considered a place unto itself, so to speak. Why? Usually, let's take, for example, Meleches Hotzar. Meleches Hotzar requires a hanocha. Hanoch has to be on a very choshuva place, which is called a makom dalad al dalad, four tefachim square. A yad is obviously less than four tefachim square, and yet it has that chashivus. Now, to the same extent that it has that chashivus to be considered a makom hanocha, as far as Shabbos is concerned, is chayv melechus hotzo when he puts it down in his hand, so too it's considered a makom choshuv le'inyan kinyonim. So that when he places the wallet into his hand, it's considered as if he lifted it up. Again, in the Chiddush here, even though the hand is below three tefachim, and again, the reason why we want to make sure that the hand is below three tefachim is because we want to make sure that he's chai for Shabbos, and he's only chai for Shabbos when he puts it down into Rishus HaRabim, because Hotzah means taking it from Rishus HaYochid and placing it down in Rishus HaRabim. So it's critical that his hand is below three tefachim. That sets it up as being in a makom of Rishus HaRabim. However, if you ask me, why is he kona in the case where he drags it, and now his hand is below three tefachim in Rishus HaRabim? After all, Rishus HaRabim goes up as high as three tefachim, so that now the object, the wallet that he stole, is located in Rishus HaRabim. How do you achieve a kinyan meshicha into Rishus HaRabim? There is no valid kinyan meshicha in Rishus HaRabim. The answer is, it's not kinyan meshicha, but rather what?
Hagbah.
Kinyan hagbah. And what sets it up is a kinyan hagbah. After all, hagbah requires that you lift it up above three tefachim, which would mess us up as far as Shabbos is concerned, because he needs hanocha below three tefachim in order to achieve Rishus HaRabim. The answer is that even though his yad is below three tefachim, the whole concept of hakbah is to show that you've taken over the object, so to speak, by lifting it up. And here, since the yad of a person has that chashivus, therefore it's as if he lifted it up. Ki de Omar Rava, the Omar Rava, yadu shel adam chashuvalo arba alba. That if a person places an object down into a yad, that yad has the chashivus of hanochas chefetz, again, as far as melechus otzah is concerned, in a makom dalet al dalet. Even though, again, as we said before, the yad is not, technically, it's not dalet al dalet. So when a person takes an object out of Rishus HaRabim and puts it into Rishus HaYochid, or vice versa, he takes it out of Rishus HaYochid, puts it in Rishus HaRabim, he needs to place it down on a makom of dalet al dalet. If it's less than dalet al dalet, it's called a makom ptur. And that's not considered hanocha. Hanocha means on a secure place. But if he puts the object down into his yad, or somebody else's yad for that matter, that's considered as a hanoch al mokum sheyesh bo dalet al dalet, because again, the yad has a tfisa, it has a grasp over the object, so it's very secure. So a person who takes an object on Shabbos, and he puts it down, taking from one rishus to another, he puts it down in the yad of a person in another rishus, he's chayim from lechas hotzah. Once we establish that the yad of a person is so chashuv, that's considered le'inyin meleches hotzah to be a makom chashuv, then even here where he puts it into a yad that's within three tefachim from the karka, the yad is considered, shall we say, a makom b'fnei atzmo. It's like completely divorced from its surroundings, if you follow what I mean. The surrounding area where the yad is, that whole entire airspace is considered shalom, but here it's considered a makom bifnei atzmo. And therefore, when he drags the wallet from the rishus of Bailim and he puts it into his yad, even if his hand is very low down, it's considered like connected to the karka because it's below three tefachim, he's going to be kone midin gneva. And at the same moment, he's going to be chayav mishum lechas hotzah. So we now have a perfect simultaneity between kinyanei gneva and lechas hotzah. And that's going to generate the p'tur of kim lev d'rabim.
You've been saying hagba'ah, hagba'ah. This is like hagba'ah, but the truth is, it looks to me like it's taking it from rishut yachid to rishut yachid to another rishut yachid. Are these two treated the same, more or less?
Well, again, I don't want to say that he's taking it into another Rishut HaYachid, because then I'm going to be messed up as far as the Chiyuv Shabbos is concerned. So, I'm stuck in a bind. I'm between a rock and a hard place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Sidi Rishus HaRabim was all about in the previous Ukimta before the Ravashi. I'm always trying to look for a place that on the one hand has the status of Rishus HaRabim and he's Chai Mishum Lechas Hotzah, and on the other hand has the status of Rishus HaYachid to be Chai for Kenyan Gneva under Kenyan Mashicha. And that led me to the entire complexity with Sidei Rishus HaRabim,
okay.
That it had two different dinim. What Ravashi is doing is he's freeing us from Kenyan Mashicha, and instead he substituted Kenyan Hagbah. Why? Because what does he gain by that? Even if the Hagbah took place in Rishus HaRabim, it's still a valid Kenyan. Because again, Kinyan Akbar is a very powerful Kinyan that applies even in Rishus HaRabim. The only problem is that where's the Akbar if he didn't lift it up above three tefachim? Hagbah always requires a minimum of three tefachim of Hagbah. Now again, you may say, well, maybe he lifted it up. He lifted up his hand, you know, the hand to which he receives the above three tefachim. But that Ravashi doesn't have that option, because then he's not going to be chayev for hotzah, because we need that the hanocha took place in Rishus HaRabim, which means that it has to be within three tefachim above the ground of Rishus HaRabim in order to be chai from lechas hotzah. If that be the case, how could Ravashi substitute kinyan akbar for kinyan mashicha, allowing the kinyan to be valid even in Rishus HaRabim, when akbar requires three tefachim? And the answer has to be that the yad of a person is considered, as far as Hagbah is concerned, that's a great Kinyan Hagbah. I no longer have to look at the airspace in which his hand is located and say, well, he's got a Hagbah in Rosh Hashanah. Well, that's irrelevant Hagbah, because Hagbah works even in Rosh Hashanah. Ella, what are you going to object and say Hagbah requires that he lifted up three tefachim? He didn't lift it up three tefachim. And Harai is chayv mishum aleches otzoh, which required anoch in Rosh Hashanah. And the answer is, why do we require Hagbah of gimel tefachim? Because we need a certain chashivus, a certain significance to the demonstration that this object is mine. Well, he can demonstrate the object is mine even below three tefachim, and it's considered Hagbah if he places it into his yad. Because yadu shalom chashuvelo kiv makom bifnei atzmo. It's a very chashiv makom. Horaya in Shabbos yichay fishum mishum hanoch. Again, Rav will say, this is a Chazor Shir, so if we were learning this Be'iyun, there would be a lot to talk about. I'm just going to end the discussion here, because I think we did a decent job, but I want to really get up to Rav Acha. So let's take a look at the Gemara of Rav Acha. Rav Acha Masni Hochi. And Ravina Masni, he has a different way. So we're going to have a machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina as to whether or not Rav Ashi's interpretation can be accepted. Rav Acha could accept Rav Ashi's interpretation that if he moves the object from one hand to the other, even if the other hand that receives the object is below three tefachim, he could be kone the object to be chayv for gneva. But Ravina could not possibly understand the Gemara and the Braisa like Rav Ashi did, and therefore liolam di afke lirshus harabim ubershus harabim nami kana. So let's understand what is the root here of the issue, and it's going to be a machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina. The issue is there a Kinyan Meshicha in Rishus HaRab? We've been assuming up until now, like Rav Achak in fact holds, that there's no such thing as a Kinyan Meshicha in Rishus HaRab. You must have a Rishus HaYochid in order to achieve a Kinyan Meshicha. And therefore we looked in for Rav Ashi's Ukimta of a Yad, and the Yad has Halacha of Hagbah, and therefore we could substitute Hagbah for Meshicha, because if it was pure Meshicha, then there's no such thing as a Kinyan Meshicha in Rishus HaRab. Hence Rav Acha will certainly be on board, he'll accept Rav Ashi's Ukimta. However, Ravina happens to hold, and we haven't seen this until now, that Meshicha is effective even in Rishus HaRab. So therefore, when a person drags a wallet from the Rishus HaBailim into Rishus HaRabim, that Meshicha, by dragging it, is an effective, meaningful Kinyan, even though it's in Rishus HaRabim. Now we'll see exactly how the Gemara analyzes this Machlokas. But if that be the case, then according to Ravina, there's no need to circumvent Kinyan Meshicha. We can learn this brisa simply, straightforward, that's talking about a Kinyan Meshicha. What forced Rav Ashi to replace Meshicha with Hagbah was the fact that he holds like Rav Acha, and Rav Acha holds that there's no Meshicha in Rishus HaRabim. So we have to get rid of Meshicha and substitute Hagbah, because Hagbah is effective even in Rishus HaRabim. But according to Ravina, who maintains that there is a Kinyan of Meshicha and Rishus HaRabim, there's no need to push us, push the elephant to the eye of the needle here and accept Rav Ashi's substitution of Hagbah for Meshicha. We can go back to the old assumption that we're dealing with Meshicha, and the very moment that he drags the kiss into Rishus HaRabim, he crosses the threshold between Rishus HaYoch and Rishus HaRabim, two things happen. He becomes Chayev for Hanocha, meaning for Meleches Otzah, and at that moment he becomes Chayev for Gneva, because he effectuates a Kinyan Gneva called Meshicha, which is effective even in Rishus HaRabim, hence we have Kimleib the Ramine. V'travayu b'diyuka d'ha masnis and kamiflegi. Both Rav Acha and Rav Ashi have a diuk, and Ravina, excuse me, both Rav Acha and Ravina have a diuk in a Mishnah, actually. Masnisa means a Mishnah. So they're arguing about how to be medayik in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah has a Reisha and a Seifa, and the question is whether you put the emphasis on the Reisha or on the Seifa. This Mishnah appears at the end, towards the end of Masechta Bava Kamma, and we're talking about a person who steals an ox, and he's dragging the ox, right? He can't lift up the ox, it's too heavy for him. He steals the ox from the Rishus HaBailim by dragging it out into Rishus HaRab. So the Brisa says, Umes Rishus HaBailim. If the animal dies, let's say gets a heart attack and dies before he crosses the threshold into Rishus HaRabim, Potter. He doesn't have to pay Karen, and certainly doesn't have to pay Kefil, etc. Why? Because Mashiach was not Kone. And even though had he taken it out into Rishus HaRabim, apparently he would have been Kone, but the animal died Rishus Bailim. And this would seem to indicate that Kinyan Mashiach works in Rishus HaRabim. The problem here is and the reason for the absence of a kinyan on the part of the ganav is because the animal died before he got out into Rishus HaRabim. So that's the case of Mashiach. Now the Mishnah goes on to the Seifa, and that's a case of Hagbah. And the Mishnah establishes that Higbio, if he had lifted the animal, again, exactly how you lift up a very heavy animal is the sugya itself in Bav Metzia, but let's say he was able to lift up the animal in Rishus HaBailim, then he makes a Kinyan Hagbah. And as we said many times, the Kinyan Hagbah is Kona even in Rishus HaBailim. So in this case, if the animal dies after he lifted the animal up, he's going to have to pay for the animal. In fact, he'll have to pay not only Karen, he'll have to pay Kefil as a ganav. Why? Because his kinyan was effective even before the animal died. Now the Mishnah in the Sefer gives another scenario in which he clinched his kinyan before the animal dies. Osho tzio mirshus bailim umes, and it died after he took it out of Rishus HaBailim. Now here the Mishnah is going back to the case of Mashiach, and the Mishnah is assuming that once he crossed over the boundary into Rishus HaRabim, meaning he took it out of Rishus HaBailim, he already clinched his kinyan Mashiach, which would be indicative of Ravina. You remember that we said, according to Ravina, that a Kinyan Mashiach is effective even in Rishus HaRabim. So if he was able to be Motzi Rishus Bailim and he took it into Rishus HaRabim, then even if the animal died, he's going to be Chayiv, because the very moment he took it out into Rishus HaRabim, he was Kona with Kinyan Mashiach. So Ravina Diyek Mi Reisha, we're going to see what that means in just a minute. Rav Acha Diyek Mi Seifa. Now it's based on this Mishnah and how to read this Mishnah or how to derive conclusions for the Mishnah, we can produce the machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina. Ravina diek mi reisha. It says, Hayamoshcho v'yotze umes b'rishus bailim. In other words, the reason why he's potter in this case is because the animal died before he crossed the threshold into Rishus HaRabim. Time of the mes b'rishus bailim. The reason why he's potter is because he never crossed into Rishus HaRabim. Notice, even though he didn't take it into his own private Rishus, which would be Rishus HaYochid, he only took it out to Rishus HaRabim, he was already Kona, and therefore if the animal dies, he's Chayav. This is the way Ravina derives from this Mishnah the conclusion that Mashiach is a Kinyan that's valid even if you take it out into Rishus HaRabim. But now we get to Rav Acha diyek mi seifa. In the seifa it says higbio, o shehotzio, which means only if he took it out, or again, I'm talking about Mashiach now, if he lifted it up, he's chayev, and he was kodem, he did Mashiach. But if he didn't lift it up, he continues dragging it. So in such a case, he could only be chayev for as a ganav mi din kinyan Mashiach. So how do we learn the word hotzio? We thought the word otzio means he took it out of Rishus Bailam and he brought it into Rishus Aravim. Nein, that's not true, says Rav Acha. Hotza duvya d'agba. The Mishnah in one breath has two cases, hagba and hotzio. So this word hagba here is going to shed a light on the word hotza. Ma hagba di asi lirshuse. In the case of hagba, since he has it in his hand, as we said many times, once you grasp something in your hands, it's as if you took it into your private rishus. Af hotza nami di asi lirshuse, which means that he took it into his private rishus. He took it into his own chatzer, and there he made a kinyan mashicha. So the Gemara asks Rav Acha Kasha Reisha, how is Rav Acha going to support the Reisha of this Mishnah? The Mishnah says, without mentioning Hagbah at all, the Mishnah says, Ayamoshcha v'yotze, if he had successfully taken it out of Rishus HaBayal, meaning he took it into Rishus HaRavim, then he'd be Chayev. There's no mention here of Hagbah. And then Ravina is going to have a problem with the Sefer, because the Mishnah and the Sefer in one breath presents both the case of Hagbah and the case of Hotzah. And Hagbah is considered that he took it into his own private Rishus. That's called the Asi L'Rishuse. And therefore, by equation, Hotzah should also be a case of Hotzio L'Rishuso. He took it out into his own private domain. So Gemara says, Reisha l'Rav Ashi lo kasha. Why? How does Rav Ashi defend himself against the Pshat in the Reisha? Kama delo osi l'rshuse rishus bailim karina be. In other words, the Mishnah doesn't say that he took it into a rishus haravim. The Mishnah says he's got to get it out of rishus habailim. And what does it mean he has to get it out of rishus habailim? He has to take it into his own private rishus. So the way we read this Mishnah, the ratio of the Mishnah according to Rav Acha is the following. So because it was Mesprishus Bailam, he's potter. If it had been Mesprishus Haganov, then he'd be chayv. What does it mean, Brishus Haganov? Brishus Haganov means in his own private rishus, in Rishus HaYochid. Seifa l'Ravina lo kasha, tzad dum yudag ba lo amrinon. He's not pressed by the fact that the Mishnah in one breath mentions these two scenarios of Hagbah and Hotzah. They're totally different. Hagbah is always considered as if he took it into his own Rishus, but in the case of Hotzah, he didn't take it into his own Rishus. He took it out of the Rishus Bailam, but he brought it into Rishus Aravim, and that's enough to effectuate a Kinyan Mashicha. So the bottom line is that we have Machlokas between Rav Acha and Ravina as to whether or not Kinyan Mashicha is valid in Rishus HaRavim. And depending upon which view you take, you'll decide whether you want to accept Rav Ashi Zukimta, because again, as we said before, Rav Ashi was hard-pressed understanding the Brisa as a case of Mashicha, because Rav Ashi was of the opinion that there is no Mashicha in Rishus HaRavim, and that's why he substituted Hagbah for Mashicha. Ravina could learn the Brisa straightforward, Kipshuta. That is, that he took it out into Rishus HaRavim. Aye, there's no Kinyan Mashicha in Rishus HaRavim. The answer is yes, there is a Kinyan Mashicha in Rishus HaRavim. Now, although that took us a half hour, this is really the tag on or the completion of Thursday's Shia. We didn't get a chance on Thursday to finish the Shia. So today's Shia starts now.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay. Now, the Mishnah says that Habal Achos of Yalachos Aviv, etc., the whole list of Chayve Krisus, he pays Knas. Now, the truth is that we have an overlap in this case of what's called Malkos Umama. Why is that so? Let me assume for the time being, I don't have a proof for this yet, that there was Asra for Malkos. Every Chiyuv Kares gets Malkos, but only on the condition there was Asra. They warned him that you're going to get Malkos. Let's assume, if all things are equal, unless we hear otherwise, that there was Asra for Malkos. Well, if there was Asra for Malkos, then why does he pay Mamon? We have a principle called Kedei Rishaso, Mishum Rishachas HaTomachano. and you don't give a person both Malchus and Mammon, in this case he should get the more severe of two punishments, namely, he should be punished with Malchus. And yet, the Mishnah says he pays Knas, which means he gets away with paying the money without suffering the punishment of Malchus. Uramini, but we have another Mishnah which contradicts this Mishnah. That's the Mishnah in Makos that says Eluin Alokin. In these cases, you get Malchus. Again, assuming there was Asra and Abal Achos, Malchos Avachos, Ima Achos, Ishto Aishes Achive Al Aishes Achiyah Val Nida. It's the same identical list that we have here in our Mishnah. And here in the Mishnah in Makos, instead of giving him the ability to pay the Knas, the Mishnah forces Malchus upon him. Now the easiest way of reconciling this apparent contradiction would be to say that in our Mishnah there's no Malchus because there was no Asra for Malchus, whereas the Mishnah in Makos is addressing a scenario where there was Asra for Malchus. That would be the easiest way out. And that, in fact, is going to be Rav Yochanan. But first we're going to see Ula, because Ula is not interested in saying that one Mishnah is without Asra, one Mishnah is with Asra. So Ula is going to come up with an entirely different reconciliation, as we'll soon see. Now, the Kaimalon, this is the Gemara's Kasha, di eno loke umeshalin. The principle of Kedei Rishaso teaches us, and that's how we accept it, la'alocha, that you don't get two punishments. And it means that eno dem loke umeshalin. Now, okay, so what do you do in a case? The principle is abstract, is eno dem loke umeshalin. So what do you mete out to him? What punishment of the two do you mete out to him? Well, the answer is that's a stira between two Mishnayos, because our Mishnah in Ksuvos comes to the conclusion, or the underlying principle of our Mishnah is that in the case of Loki Mishalim is Mishalim Velo Loki. The Mishnah in Makkah says Loki Velo Mishalim. Omar Ula Lo Kasha. Kan Bachoso Nara. Kan Bachoso Bogeres. It all depends whether there's Knas or not. Meaning, if there's both Mammon and Knas, Enochinami, according to Ula, you pay the money and you don't get the Knas. But the Mishnah in Masechta
you mean money and Malkot?
I'm sorry, you don't get Malkus, I meant to say, sorry. But in the case of the Mishnah in Malkus, the Mishnah doesn't say that it was Baal Achoso Nara, because the Mishnah is not limited to the case of Nara. The Mishnah is talking about a case of Achoso, which includes even a case of Bogeres. In a case of Bogeres, Enochinami, there's no Knas, and therefore he gets Malkus. So the Gemara right away asks, Achoso Bogeres Nami or Ika Boshes Upagam. Okay, you're right that once a woman has become, you know, once she reaches her 12 and a half birthday, she's no longer a Nara and she doesn't collect Knas, but she still collects Boshes Upagam. And now we're talking about a case of Ones. And if there's Boshes Upagam, how could the Mishnah establish in Masechta Makos that you get Malchus? Ula is of the opinion that when there's an overlap of Mammon and Malchus, you pay the Mammon and you don't get Malchus. So now the Gemara is going to look for Hechetimtzes, according to Ula, where there's no Knas because she's a Bogeres, and yet there's no Chiyuv Boshes Upagam. So Gemara first takes a stab at the following. Bishota. In other words, the reason why there's no Boshes Upagam is because there really is no Boshes. Why is there no Boshes? How can a woman be raped and there's no Boshes? The answer is she's a Shota. A Shota doesn't get humiliated, so she doesn't suffer the tsar of humiliation. What about Pagam? And the answer is that if you sell a Shota on the market, you're lucky if you get basic, you know, the lowest common, you know, the lowest possible price. The fact that she's now a bu'ula as a result of this onus, that doesn't have any impact on her value on the market. Basically, again, in the case of a shota, then, you know, you're lucky if you get a shekel for her, you know, because what kind of work can she do? I mean, it doesn't pay to buy her as a shivcha. I mean, there's no value, really. So the pagam element is completely neutralized. But let's consider the fact, if you recall, the difference between ones and mafata is that ones has a third payment in addition to moshe to become that tsar. That's what the Gemara asks now, va'ika tsara. And if it's a case of an ones, then irrelevant, regardless of the fact that she's a shota, she still suffers the same physical pain, and therefore there would be a chiyuv to pay for tsar.
We're talking emotional pain, correct?
No, we're not talking about emotional pain. Okay. Because emotionally she's not in the she's not in the fold. But physically she suffers the same pain even if she's a shota.
The Gemara talks about that at some point. The physical
I don't know that we got
pain.
It here, but
no, I mean in the chapter somewhere.
Well, anyway, let's go on.
Okay.
So now we're forced to say b'mafuta that, because again, according to Ulef, if it's a case of an ones situation, then we have a problem because shota ahin, shota aher, but she still suffers tsar, and that would knock off the chiyuv mamon, because Ula holds that, I'm sorry, that would knock off the chiyuv knas, because Ula holds that whenever you pay mamon, there's no malchus. I'm not sure if I got that right, but let me say it one more time. In a case of ones, Ula is in trouble. Why? Because despite the fact that she's a shota, she suffers tsar, and he's going to have to pay for tsar. So the ma'anis is going to pay for tsar, he doesn't get malchus. So we have no way of interpreting the Mishnah in Malchus, which says that he does get malchus. So therefore we're forced to the position of mafuta, that the Mishnah in Malchus, which says that we meet out malchus, is talking about a case of mafuta. So if a man, he seduces his sister, but he's going to get malchus, but there are no payments over here. Why are there no payments? Because she's a bogeres, so there's no knas. There's no payment of chavola because she's a mocheles. She agreed and consented to have this relationship. So then, hashtadosis lahochi afilu te machoso nara. Now we can say that even if she's a Nara, we don't have to necessarily box ourselves in and say the Mishnah in Malchus is talking about a case of a Nara. I'm sorry, of a Bogeris. It could be a case of a Nara. But be Yisoma. Yisoma means that there's no father. If there's no father, then the Knas goes to her, and the Bosh Tupgam likewise goes to her. But she's a mafuta, and if she's a mafuta, then there's no payment to knas, there's no payment to moshe of gam, hence we're left with malchus for the violation of the law of Baal HaChoso. So the bottom line, according to Ula, is that the Mishnah in Malchus, which says we meet out malchus, and there's no chiv mamon, according to the way Ula interprets it, is because we're talking about a mafuta, and we're talking about a yisoma. So at this point, we could also drop the ukimta of shota. But we don't need shota. We don't need bogeres. We don't need any of that. All we need is nara yisoma mafuta. If it's yisoma mafuta, then there's no payment whatsoever, and that's why the Mishnah establishes that he gets malchus. Alma kasavar ula. What's the sum total of all this that we've been learning? Kol hecha koin to ula. Whenever there's an overlap to ikam mama to malchus, is mama mishalin milka lo laki. Now that might mean, again, if you want to take this on a simple level, superficial level, it might just mean that according to ula, the Torah is establishing that paying mamon is a more chomer onish than giving a person malchus, which again intuitively is a little bit counterintuitive, I would say, to say that of the two punishments, mamon is the more severe punishment. So that's why I think the Gemara is asking him, minole le'ula ha, it's impossible that Ula came up with this as a svara d'nafshe, just based on his own logic. There must have been some source in the Torah that the Torah advocates in the case of an overlap of Momon and Malchus, that you pay Momon and you don't get Malchus. So the answer is Gomar Michovel Bechavero. So the precedent for Momon and knocking off Malchus is Chovel Bechavero. Because ma cholva b'chaver de'ika mamonu malchus, we'll explain exactly why he gets malchus. Is mamonu b'shalim, the Torah says you pay the five categories of tashlumei chavola, but milka lo laki, you don't get malchus. And that's going to be the binyan av, that's going to be my prototype to teach me that in all cases, kol hecha, af kol hecha de'ika mamonu malchus, is mamonu b'shalim, milka lo laki. Ula is just applying the principle that we derive from Chovel B'Chavero to the case of Onus and Mefata. And he says that in our Mishnah, the reason why he pays the Knas is because of this principle that's derived from Chovel, that Kol Hechadika Mamonu Malkus, Mamonu Mishali, Milka Lo Loki. You'll ask me, well, what's Malkus in Chovel B'Chavero? Chovel B'Chavero is Nezikin. But the answer is, there's a lav in the Torah called Pen Yosef. And based on that lav, if a person violates Pen Yosef, assuming he got a gasra for that, he would get malchus. So by striking and wounding his friend and violating Pen Yosef, he should be chayv malchus. And yet, the Torah says that he pays tashlumei mamon. That's what the Torah says. The Torah says, rapa yirape. And what does El say? Shifto. What does it say? So it means that he pays mamon. So we suspend malchus. And that becomes now the paradigm for all cases that we give mamon, we pay, make him pay mamon, and we don't give malchus. So the Gemara at this point says that it's not fair to derive any conclusions from Chovel B'Chavero. Why? Because you're assuming, Ula, that mamon is more chomer than malchus. Let's just dramatize it. Let's say it's a $1 million law case. So you'd rather get malchus than the 39 lashes than pay $1 million and be in debt for the rest of your life. You need that money to pay up your debts. So you'd rather have that money and we'll be rich than suffer the. But the Torah says no. We're going to give you the more severe violation. You're going to pay the $1 million. So you want to derive that conclusion from Chovel? No. Chovel is a chumrah. I'll prove to you that the Torah was much more machmir in Chovel than in any other parallel cases. And that would justify why in the case of Chovel do you get mamon and you don't get malchus. Right? Because Ula is working with the underlying assumption that mamon is more chomer than malchus. Well, you can't derive that from Chovel. Shekein chai b'chamisha dvarim. No other case of mazik other than Chovel is chai of five categories. One of the five categories is common to all the Zikin, and that's called Nezek. But Tsar, Ripui, Sheves, and Boshes are four categories of Tashlumei Chavolo, which are unique to Chavolo. And the Torah is really hitting you, you know, with a very big chumra that you have to pay all these five categories of Tashlumei Chavolo. And that's why the Torah wanted to be so machmir, and the Torah said that you'll get mamon, you'll pay the mamon, and you don't get malchus for violating the law of Pen Yosef. But now the Gemara wants to play it from the other side. Let's assume that on the contrary, that Ula would have to admit to what we thought was intuitive, that mamon is a lesser punishment. Malchus as a corporeal physical punishment is more chomer than mamon. So imamonu lakula, if we assume that mamon is lakula, then in the case of Chovel B'Chaver, the Torah was mekil, and that could teach me that there's a kal v'chomer here, even though Chovel B'Chaver, the Torah was machmir with five categories of payment, and yet the Torah was mekil and let him get away with what? With payment and alleviate him from malchus. Is kolshken, how much more so in a case where the Torah would be less machmir, that the Torah would let him get away with mamon. If the Torah in the case of chavol, which is a big chumra case, and yet the Torah lets him get away, the Torah is compassionate on him and says we're going to eliminate the real punishment that you should get, namely the more chomer punishment of malchus, I'm going to let you get away with paying mamon, and how much more so in a case of a lesser violation, a lesser isur that's not on the level of chovel, how much more so the Torah would say let's allow you to get away easy, and you pay mamon and you don't get malchus. The Gemara says, "Nein, I'll prove to you that chovel is a kula." We just finished saying that Chovel is a Chumra, but I can also prove to you that Chovel is a Kula. What's the Kula in Chovel? Shekein Huter Mechlolo Bebezdin. That the violation of this law lends itself to a Heter in the case of a Shliach Bezdin who's meeting out 39 Malkus, and the Torah allows him to, so to speak, violate Pen Yosef. So since this Pen Yosef law is limited, and there is an exception to Pen Yosef, that puts Chavola in a case of a Kula. And if Chavola is a Kula, that's why the Torah let you get away with murder, so to speak. Instead of giving Malkus, you'll get the punishment of paying Tashlume Chavola. Ella says the Gemara, Gomar mi edim zomimim, ma edim zomimim momenu malchus, momonu mishalim milka lo loki, afkol hechadika momenu malchus, momonu mishalim milka lo loki. So two witnesses testified on Reuven that he owes Shimon 100. Now they became zomimim. So the Torah says, v'asisim lo kashin zomim, he has to pay Reuven 100, because that's what he wanted to be mafsid Reuven. And we're going to suspend the normal malchus for violating the law. What's the law? Lo sanav reach eid shoker. So he gave false testimony, he perjured himself in a court of law, he should be getting malchus. But the Torah says, no, instead of malchus, we're going to give you mama. And we're going to make you pay the 100 that you wanted to impose as a payment on the nidah. And this becomes now our prototype of mama mishali milka lo laki. So Gemara says no. Male edim zom shekein edim tzricha masra, edim zom as a chumra. The Torah was very machmer in edim zomimim. That's a sugya that we're going to learn later on. There's no asra required in the case of edim zomimim, and they still get punished. Ah, if the Torah is being machmir and edim zomimim, that's why the Torah slapped him with a chiyuv of paying money, because now the Gemara is assuming that mamon is more chamor. Ah, the ima mamon lekulahu. But if on the other hand we maintain that mamon is a kula, so then you'll ask the question: well, if edim zomimim is more machmir than and yet the Torah says you get away with the kula of mamon, how much more so in other cases which are less chamor, you should get away with murder, and you should be paying money and not getting malchus. And the Gemara answers, no. Shekein lo asu maisa. There's a kula in edim zomimim that there's no maisa. Ela gomar mitravaya, but rather ula derives it from what we call a tzara shoga. And ma'al tzara shoga, what's common to both these cases of chavola and edim zomimim, is the ika momenu malchus momenu shalom milka lo loki afkol hechad ika momenu malchus momenu shalom milka lo loki. So if you'll slug me up from chovel, because you'll say chovel is unique in that you pay five dvarim, or chovel is unique that it's hutam mechlol etzel bezdin, so I'll derive it from edim zomimim. And if you'll slug me up from edim zomim as the chumra that you don't need asra, or edim zomim as the kula that lo avid maisa, then I'll quote chavola. And since each pircha is neutralized, in this case we apply the principle of tzara shava. The Gemara rejects this. Mala tzara shava shavahen, shekein yesh mehem tzad chomor. They both have a chumra. Or imamonu lekula sheyesh mehem tzad kal. So each one has a chumra. For example, in the case of chovel, you pay five dvarim. In the case of edim zom, you get kasher zom even without hasra. And if you're going to tell me mamona lekula, so I'll tell you they both have a tzad kula, because hutu mechlolo in the case of chovel b'chavero, and loasa maisa in the case of edim zomimim. And this will lead us for tomorrow's Shir Mitzvah Shem to the beginning of page Lamed Beis Amud Beis, in which the Gemara finally derives Ula's principle from Gzeirah Shavah. That's what we'll get up to tomorrow. This belongs to the yeshiva. Oh. So I